Friday, April 13th, 2018. It is 9 a.m. and this is panel number 5002 entitled Turn Off the Gaslight, How to Build Intimate and Healthy Relationships. My name is Judy Taub. I'm a clinical social worker and the clinical team lead at Counseling and Psychiatric Services here at CU Boulder. I'm particularly interested in this topic primarily because this is a lot of the work we do with our college students, is helping build healthy relationships. This is kind of what they're developmentally doing at this age. So I'm very excited to be here, and I want to introduce our panel members this morning. We have Tai Toshiro, who is an author of the book Award, a social scientist. He's an expert on relationship breakups, enhancing long-term relationships, and online dating. He was awarded Professor of the Year at University of Colorado, University of Maryland. And I'm particularly excited to see Tai, who did his internship with us 10, 15 years ago. So it's exciting to see him back here. We also have Zana Vrangalova, sex researcher, adjunct professor of psychology at NYU, a sex educator, writer, and podcaster. She has spent her career studying different elements of sex and sexual activity, bringing what historically has been taboo or judged topics out in the open for discussion. And then we also have Chris Borland, a former NFL linebacker and CEO of a company that integrates meditation into athletics. Made the incredibly brave move to retire from the NFL after his rookie year due to concerns about brain injuries, and is a strong proponent of changing tackle football to flag football for youth under 12. As the mother of a 15-year-old boy who has pleaded with me to play football. So,
how many of you... Oh, wait, this is not on. How many of you had heard the word gaslight before this panel? Okay, we'll see. How many of you had no idea what that means or still not sure? Okay, a lot of you. So I thought, you know, there's all these new terms being thrown around these days, gaslighting, ghosting, cricketing. I just learned cricketing recently. So I thought it would be a good idea. What it is? So ghosting is when you kind of stop responding to someone, and then cricketing is when you take like a day to respond. Okay, so a long time to respond to drawing it out. We're not talking about that right now. But so I thought it would be good to start by defining what this is, and so kind of defining the issues, and then we can talk about them. So gaslighting is sort of a form of manipulation in relationships. And it can be in any kind of relationship, romantic, friendships, work relationships, and it can be intentional and it can be not necessarily intentional, but it's a form of manipulation where one person, by what they're saying and doing, are making the other person question their sanity in a way, question their thoughts, their memory of what happened, what has been happening, who said what, where, when we went somewhere and did something, right? Their feelings, the events. And, it's something that happens and can happen over a long period of time that can kind of seep into the relationship slowly, slowly. And it's a form of abuse, right? It's a form of toxic kind of abusive relationship where people over time start to feel, and these are some of the signs, if you Google it, these are some of the signs of gaslighting that you're going to find, that you start to feel like you're always doing something wrong. You start to feel like and everything you do is wrong, that you have to apologize often to your partner, that you often think it's your fault when things have happened in the relationship. You are starting to feel more and more isolated from your friends, from your family. You are kind of feeling it like you have to make excuses for your partner's behavior and what they're doing, questioning whether what you're saying and doing is appropriate, kind of starting to question your sanity, like, am I really remembering things right? Is this really what's been going on? Wondering if you're being too sensitive, wondering, feeling more anxious and less confident than you were over time, making it increasingly hard to make decisions, on your own, kind of starting to rely more and more on what the partner is saying. And as you can imagine, this is not something that you want to be happening in relationships, but it is something that very frequently happens. And because it's so insidious and can take a long time to form and develop over time, very often people don't really realize that it's happening. It's like being slowly boiled in hot water that is slowly getting warmer and warmer and warmer, right? And only in retrospect, you kind of look back and realize, oh my God, this is what was going on. And, so it's a form of abusive relationship that needs to be, you kind of have to be vigilant to realize that it's happening and do something about it. Okay, I'm gonna end.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. It's Friday the 13th. I'm sitting next to someone who researches casual sex, someone who researches social awkwardness. It's my 11th hour of public speaking in less than 5 days. CWA is interesting.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing you're all here at 9.
Yeah, there's been a few sex relationship intimacy panels really early. But people show up to that.
I wonder if that's an intentional thing. They're like, what do we do to get people here at 9? Just put sex and relationships at 9, and you gotta get folks to come.
They're knocking down the door. Well, I was driving back from Denver late last night and thinking about what I was going to say on this panel. We have two experts. And then someone as an introvert and a younger person navigating what's kind of an ambiguous relationship environment, I think I fall between your fields of research. And driving back, I was thinking, okay, well, what would I have to say on this panel? And strangely, the first thing that popped into my head was Alan Alda. And it's not his coif of salt and pepper hair or his great wit or his brilliance, but it's actually what he's involved in outside of acting and writing and speaking. He's involved in the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science, and he's all about communication. And Jana mentioned it with gaslighting, whether it's ghosting or cricketing. As a younger person navigating this, it's transformed from high school and to today for me. I talk to girls who like to communicate on Snapchat, like exclusively. I don't really care to do that, and I don't understand like the inner workings of how to communicate. And I don't know if it's related to my time in football, but sometimes I can't remember the last Snapchat. And then it's like 20 hours later if they're cricketing. And then I get really socially awkward about what to say or how to restart the conversation. And so I think our inability to communicate effectively, it's somewhat ironic because we're so connected that things should be very clear. And there's like this gamesmanship with relationships, whether it's sexual relationships or sometimes friendships, where it's I feel like I'm unclear where I stand. And it's so refreshing just to speak with someone who's clear and defines. You know, we spoke for a couple of hours Wednesday night about this topic, but a lot of other things, culture and casual sex and monogamy and other things. And I think we've made an art form in this topic and in other topics of talking past one another. And we dive into dialogues about things before we've had an objective discussion about the topic. That's why I love what you research and Ty, what you research, because it pinpoints what we're actually going to talk about. And so before you bring your own baggage or your social media strategy of how you're going to cricket or ghost or manipulate someone into thinking you're not interested, but you are, and make them chase you, it's so great to have a clear idea of where you stand. And I don't pretend we're there. I think it's so common that particularly young people engage in these ways of flirting or gaslighting someone they're interested in. So I'm eager to learn more. This is I'm going to be taking notes throughout this panel to try to figure out what the hell's going on.
Well, Chris, I'm right there with you, man. Sometimes you'll be texting with somebody, trying to set up a date, and they'll be like, yeah, let's go out. You're like, great. And you're like, well, I want to go to this place. I'm like, I love that place. And you're like, what time? And I'm like, nothing, right? And you're like, I know you saw it. Like, we were going back and forth, you know? And it's like a week later, and they'll text back, and they're like, hey, I miss you. Where you been? I'm like, did you not see the text right above? They're like, yeah. So I think with gaslighting on the receiving end, you feel this like, am I the only one who thinks that this is not right or not logical? And I think someplace we're seeing that right now. I don't want to get too much in politics, but it's politics, right? You see these stories that are just stranger than fiction sometimes. And, you know, President Obama was saying the other day in an interview, he said, you know, you are entitled to your opinions, quoting a previous politician, but you're not entitled to your own facts, right? And, I don't know, people smarter than me say we're in some postmodern era, which I take to mean we're in an age where the truth is a representation of a representation of a representation. And if that sounds confusing, it is, right? And I think that's part of the reason why maybe it is easy to do some of these gaslighting behaviors, because you can get people lost so easily in the different layers, right, between where the actual fact lies. You know, one thing I thought might be interesting is to talk about how psychologists, research psychologists, approach the idea of truth. It's kind of a hard thing, right? What in fact is the truth, or what in fact is factual? And maybe it's never perfect, so I'm not saying this is a foolproof kind of methodology, but they have a few different things they'll think about. One of them is truth by consensus. Okay, you can argue this is fallible, but if everybody agrees about it, maybe it's true. Now, that's not always the case, right? Sometimes everybody agrees about it and everybody's wrong. But one of the things when I used to do clinical practice is I tell people, well, what do your friends think? What do your wise, grounded friends think about this situation? I want you to ask three or four of them and get some sort of consensus about what they think. Now, if all of them have the same answer and you don't like it, it's probably the right answer, right? And a good example of this is when you're falling in love with somebody. So, this research, yeah, so, or if you're just in lust with somebody. So if you're fired up about somebody in some romantic way, the brain imaging is really interesting with this. So you get hyperactivation in areas associated with pleasure and sexual desire, which would make sense, right? What is fascinating about that research is areas associated with negative emotion and evaluating cost actually deactivate, which means it's harder to get those areas to work. So if you've ever tried to reason with a friend who's in a maybe gaslighting relationship, and you're like, it is so obvious you're being manipulated here, part of the reason they have a hard time doing it is because that part of the brain is actually somewhat disabled at that point. Okay, so there's always two parties involved when we talk about relationships. There's an actor, the person perpetuating, in this case the gaslighting, and then there's the person on the receiving end who needs to try to deal with it. You know, the second thing I'll say about the truth problem in psychology is we always say behavior is the gold standard. And so if I'm desperate to get a friend out of an abusive relationship, I'll play this dirty trick. So I'll just start to anticipate the behavior that will happen because it's so predictable from the outside. So I'll say, I bet when you say that, she'll say something very emasculating to you. He's like, no. And then they get in a situation. He does something, and lo and behold, it's like, oh, well, a real man, you know, which there it is, right? It's very predictable. And so I think if you can try to evaluate gaslighting situations in a way that uses behavior as a standard, rather than trying to reason through it because that gets so confusing, you might have some more luck with that. So it's a difficult thing, you know. Probably all of us have been gaslighted at some point, I imagine. And I just had this a few weeks ago, actually. I met someone's partner. And she said, I want you to give him the shakedown, you know, figure out if he's a good guy or not. I was like, okay. So I gave him the business at the bar, you know, and checked him out. And afterwards, she said, well, what do you think? I said, he is either a really great guy or a really great sociopath. And I'm not sure which one it is. I'm supposedly supposed to be somewhat expert in this kind of thing, but that was honestly my answer. So it's a very hard thing, and I don't think it's anything to feel guilty about if you've been receiving it, that kind of thing.
When you're talking about what happens to our brains during that time, especially in the early period of love, like you're so susceptible to something like this during the infatuation period, right? The way love and relationships happen in the West, at least, right? We're basing them on this very strong attraction and love. And those initial stages that last about 6 months to maybe 18 months, depending on how joined at the hip you are for the time. But during that time, your brain is sort of on a set of drugs that you're not usually on. Cocaine, like your brain's endogenous internal version of cocaine. So you're hyperactive. You're super excited. You don't need to sleep. You don't need to drink. You don't need to eat. You're like, I can do everything. So that's one of the symptoms of infatuation. There are a few other symptoms. It's funny, we kind of talk about infatuation as if it's a disease that you catch. And it kind of is during that time. And some of the other things, there's mood dependency. Your mood depends very directly on what is happening with the person you're infatuated with. If they're texting you and not cricketing, you're great. You're in seventh heaven, right? If you are, if they're not responding, if things aren't going well, you're depressed and very, very distressed. But probably the most dangerous symptom of infatuation is the idealization that happens. You have these rose-colored glasses on that make you kind of incapable of seeing any of the negatives. Or maybe you see some of the negatives and you downplay them. You're like, oh, that's not a big deal. We can make that work. Yeah, he seems to be drinking a lot, but you know, I mean, I'm sure we can figure that out. Not that bad, right? And that coupled with that very strong focus that you have on that person during that time, you can't think of anything else, right? You're singularly focused on that person. You're thinking about them. You're spending as much time as you can, and all that. That makes you very, very susceptible to not being able to see all these other things that other people around you can see and be so like, dude, it's so obvious. Right?
I'll continue to. How many is that one?
Yeah, that one's better.
It's a little awkward that one.
Funny. I'll continue the theme of neuroscience. I'm not a neuroscientist, but I play one on panels. My foray into neuroscience and brain injury, and more recently into effective neuroscience, has introduced me to people that study meditation, mindfulness, and some Buddhist scholars. And they talk about how all suffering lies in either aversion or grasping. And I feel like with how we interact socially in the digital world, it's all about avoiding or grasping and idealizing what this perfect person may be. And we're doing so with these like prehistoric brains that are accustomed to, you know, hearing rattling in the bushes and thinking it's a saber-toothed tiger and you run, or foraging for berries, and every time you find one, you get a hit of dopamine. And today, with relationships, particularly over the phone, on Snapchat, through text, it's like every awkward or ambiguous or confusing thing someone you're interested in says is that saber-toothed tiger. And you're like, go into this space where you're trying to figure out what's going on and afraid of responding. And conversely, every time you have a notification waiting for you, it's like a hit of dopamine, like a little dopamine lollipop. I got a text from someone I like. I got, inbox on Twitter of someone that's interesting. And I don't know. I feel like, what's the answer to it? We're just kind of stuck in this place where we can't use these prehistoric brains to engage with this thing. You mentioned, Ty, having the friends that you can see what's going to happen. And I think you can even gaslight yourself. Like, if you take a step back, you know this isn't healthy and this isn't going to end well. But, like, God, I really want to keep this going and just for that next hit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting also to think about this notion of if it's on purpose or on accident. So
if someone's gaslighting you, is it, I think the way I understand gaslighting is that there's intent behind it. Like, this is a premeditated, messed up kind of way to manipulate you. And that, you should run from that as fast as you can, trust me. On the other hand, as the receiver, or the person trying to interpret what's going on, you could feel like you're being gaslighted, but it's because the other person doesn't know what they're doing, right? So I had a friend who got broken up with a couple months ago, and it was just totally heartbreaking. He was so whipped and in love and just got dumped over text, and it was just a horrible kind of thing, right? And then, I don't know, it's been like a year and a half relationship, so that's pretty long. And he's just, you know, he's pretty down, like probably kind of depressed. And he's like, I just want to know, right? I just want to know why she broke up with me. And they had a few conversations. He's like, I just think like she's being elusive. And I was like, hey, man, do you know why? Do you think she knows why she broke up with you? And he's like, no, you know? She has these mixed feelings for me, you know. So on the one hand, she really loved him in a lot of ways. And on the other hand, there was something just ineffable about why they couldn't be together and why it wouldn't work. And so how is she supposed to articulate that to him if she doesn't know, right? So I think that's an important distinction maybe, is that sometimes just social life is confusing, right? And we could unintentionally make someone else feel bad, but it's just because we're confused ourselves. And I think if it's that kind of situation where your intent is good, maybe it's just nice to say, and I think we're averse to this sometimes, I have no idea what I'm doing right now. Like, I am super confused about this relationship or about what to do, and I need to figure it out, and I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, ambivalence. And we often are ambivalent about what we feel about that person, yeah. And I think it's kind of funny, like today, in today's era, we have so much record of what is going on. It's not these conversations that nobody heard. No, it's all in text. Like, you have record of it. Right? I mean, it's the same to take it outside of relationships and politics. Like, we're being gaslighted on a daily basis by our president, who's telling us that something happened when it didn't happen. We have the data. We have the video. You know, we have all that. But you would think people wouldn't be able to do that as much today because we have so much record, and they still do. It still happens all the time. You know, I was kind of being gaslighted a little bit, or there was an attempt at that by this guy I was seeing, who at one point said, oh, I never did that. And I'm like, I have texts upon texts going back 9 months. And I have like other friends who were present at conversations that we had where you said these things. Like, how are you trying to argue that? But people will do that. And it almost makes you question your sanity, even though you have evidence, right, that's not the case. So sometimes it can be, yeah, it's just very, it can be very hard to pull yourself out of there and be like, no, this is BS, this is not true. And as Chris was saying, and often you're like, but I don't want it to be true. Like, I really like this person. And so it's so easy to kind of lull yourself into staying in some of these relationships for way longer than you really should. 4 years, 15 years, yeah, a lot of time. We already did that, but we can do it again.
It's just making someone think they're crazy by leading them on. So I think that's the
question.
Yeah. There's this great skit in the show Portlandia where there's a first date auditor. So a guy goes out on a date and he's saying, you know, I love this band and have you seen this movie? It's so great. And when he returns home, he's audited by this first date auditor who rereads a report of the date and questions him and presses him. Because he's kind of faking, he's trying to make this girl like him, so he's, you know, acting like he's way into her interests. I think that goes on with courting someone, and I think it goes on uniquely today because everything is recorded. And when things change later on, I've been talking to this girl mostly over the phone because we live in different cities for months, and it was more than a friendship. And then I found out she had a boyfriend. And so I went through the previous text and reread everything just to be like, just to see if I had it right. And you mess with your own mind because you can convince yourself one way or the other. And I didn't want to, I was like, I mentioned gaslighting yourself. Like, was I interested and therefore in the throughout the text convincing myself that it was more than what it was? Or was I right? And I don't know. And that's like, I love that Ty said you can leave it open because it is confusing. But we have the audit. We have the
maybe just give it to all of us and we'll have a vote.
Yeah, we'll
yeah.
Crowdsource it.
Yeah, we'll crowdsource it.
We have some great questions.
Yeah. Sure.
Are you okay to move into some of the questions? All right, so the first one, can a relationship that starts off good be developed into a gaslighting relationship?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, very often relationships start out good. That's why you start them, because they're good and everybody has the best intention. I mean, you can certainly have a relationship that starts out with one person already intending, right, to manipulate this other person into them doing whatever it is that they want them to do. But I think most of the time, that just kind of develops and ends up becoming that over time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's this, what we call strategic self-presentation that goes on at the start of a dating relationship. You're putting your best foot forward, mm-hmm. trying to be as interested as possible. Always, I oftentimes hear from heterosexual women, I don't understand, he was such a good listener for 2 months. And then, that's what we call regression to the mean. And it always starts out good, right? I mean, you'd have to question your own sanity, I guess, if it started out really bad, and you're like, well, let's keep this going. it's one of the things I'll think about sometimes, especially in New York, is people say, well, think about getting a dog together. It was pretty much like a ring in New York. Should we do it or not? Have you really been upset with your partner yet? Have you seen, like, their ugliest side yet, or part of their ugliest side yet? And I always like to ask, it's like kind of a downer question to ask people, but it's actually really important, right? If you haven't seen something beyond that strategic self-presentation, you really don't know the person, of course. And all of us are flawed in deep ways. And the question is can I find this person's deep flaws tolerable and somewhat charming, right? Or is this the kind of thing that is detrimental and ultimately, something that's going to make a relationship not work or be unhealthy? So, you got to be careful at the start while at the same time not dampening your enthusiasm for something that could be good. Because sometimes people give folks the business. And there's nothing wrong, like the person's being perfectly well behaved, but they're paying for the sins of previous boyfriends and girlfriends.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think it can start really great, and then people fall in and out of love at different times. So the difference now is that we're connected. So if, like, it starts hot and heavy, and one person's maybe more interested and isn't getting the feedback that they like, that initiator may lose interest, but you're still connected and still maybe in touch, and then the person that wasn't as hot early on comes back and is the other, and so it's that would maybe seem like gaslighting, but I think that's unintentional, like what you talked about before, is that it's just emotions change over time, but you never lose touch. And again, confusing, my page is filling up with notes.
I just want to add something to what Ty was saying of not making these big decisions until you've seen the other person's kind of dark side, if you will. And that's where that infatuation comes into play. So when people ask me about this, I always counsel them to not make life-changing decisions until that year and a half has passed, until you know for sure you're out of the infatuation, the rose-colored glasses have come off, and you're now seeing all of the good and the bad and the ugly and can make that decision of, yes, can I live with this for many years to come, or is this too much? So maybe don't even get a dog. Don't make babies. don't get married. Don't even do the initial stages of that, because very often what happens, people will get engaged within those 18 months. And then it's too late. Then you've kind of committed, right? Mm-hmm. By the end of the 18 months, you're like, I'm not sure I want to be doing this, but you kind of already committed. So don't make those big, like, buying a house, those kinds of things. Just wait a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's time.
What are some ways to prevent gaslighting yourself or others? How to avoid gaslighting
from coming? Sure, yeah. Well, I think maybe we could look to awkward people for a little insight, which you can't often do with social situations, but this is one of those rare instances. Awkward people, interestingly enough, are not very prone to gaslighting because they see the world in such stark terms. Like, they see it in really plain, obvious ways. I'm not saying they're better in any. This is part of what makes them awkward. Have you ever been around an awkward person and they say something way too blunt to you, right? Like, wow, that haircut did not go well for you or something. It's like, I know it didn't go well. You didn't have to tell me it didn't go well, right? And they're just reporting on the hard facts, okay? So it's actually really interesting. They just see the world as is, and they need to learn not to report on it in some sort of... But I guess if you're trying to avoid being gaslighted, then maybe that provides us some interesting insight, right? Part of the reason that they're less susceptible to it is because, unlike other people with more sophisticated social reasoning, they're not doing it on the abstract level, right? It's not in these theoretical kinds of ways that they reason about social information. They're just reasoning about it in very additive, in-the-moment kinds of ways. So I guess if you're able to shift into that a bit and just get into that kind of easy calculus about how do these things add up, then that's a good way to do it. The second thing I'll say is that I think it's important to be nice. I think it's important to be a nice person. That being said, I think it's more important to be about the truth. Okay, and I think that's one of the things that happened. It takes a while. I don't get to sound like old man in this case, but it wasn't probably until like my mid-30s that I was like, you know what, even if it's uncomfortable, the truth is always the way to go, because if you don't deal with it now, well, it's just going to get uglier down the road, right? And I know a lot of people know that already, but it's easy to forget sometimes.
I'll add friends. Listen to your friends, the people who love you, your friends and family. Well, families can often have very different ideas of who you should be with and for other reasons than gaslighting. But so depending on what your relationship is with your family. But your friends, the people who love you, they often see these things that you don't during that infatuation period. So I would say kind of check in with them. And if everybody around you who loves you says, this person is abusing you or gaslighting you or mistreating you, you know, maybe there's some truth in that. I think another thing is just kind of being aware or asking yourself every now and then, kind of checking in with yourself, every now and then, how is this relationship making me feel? You know, are there some things that this person is doing that seem to be gaslighting? Sometimes they're very obvious examples, like when someone texts you something and it's like, I didn't do that. Like, yeah, you did. Here are 15 messages to suggest so. But, you know, it can be less subtle. But you can kind of check in with yourself and be like, am I seeing these signs? And am I being... put in this situation that might be that. And then bring it up. Have a conversation. See how that person responds to that. It doesn't mean that you immediately have to be like, okay, I'm definitely being gaslighted. You're a monster. You're, you know, and you're doing this intentionally and I'm going to leave. But kind of bring it up and bring it out in the open.
Just a little something to add to that. I'm one of those socially awkward people that would love to put something bluntly but err on the side of being polite or... quiet. And when someone has their red receipts on, and that means when you text someone, it says red afterwards.
Well, if you have an iPhone.
If you have an iPhone.
Yeah. Android, sorry.
And you ask them a question, and you've been talking for a string of texts, and it says red, so you know they've read your question, whether you want to go out or what you think about something, and then you don't get a response. Like, I really at that point want to be blunt and be like, what are you doing? I call them, like, you read what I asked you. Why didn't you respond?
Yeah.
But I typically shy away.
Yes.
All right. So here's an interesting one. You know, we're talking about gaslighting and some of the manipulation. But here's a great question. What is the role and importance of struggling in a relationship? Some couples seem not to fight ever, but others struggling seems important to exploring each other in relationships. Mm.
Yeah, different people, so a couple of different things, but some people have a notion, kind of a story around their relationship. I think Robert Sternberg talks about this as a book on love stories. And some people idea about what love and relationship is very much a fight, a war. And they kind of thrive on that. They kind of enjoy, you know, many of you probably have an example, whether in your own life or somebody around you, of a couple who always seems to fight, but they're still together and they still kind of love each other and seem to be doing well together. It doesn't seem like anyone is abusing the other person. It just seems like they have a very confrontational way of relating to one another. And I think, you know, if that's kind of the kind of person you are and you find someone else who kind of has the same idea about love and relationships, then okay. And you don't feel abused and traumatized in that type of relationship. I think other people have a very different notion of what a relationship is, and frequent fights and arguments are not part of that. And if you end up pairing up with someone who does have more of that style, then that might feel like way more trouble than it's worth for the person who wants a calmer, kind of more peaceful way of interacting. So I think there are some individual differences in that regard of what kind of idea we have about our love and relationships. And at the same time, no matter who you are and where you stand on this continuum, if you will, of peacefulness versus war or confrontational relating, I think there's certainly some benefit to having arguments and having some level of fighting or not always agreeing with everything everybody says, and that helps figure yourself out, understand more about yourself, learn about yourself and other people, question some of the thoughts and feelings that you may have. So I think that's absolutely useful, but that's different from, there's a line at that can be crossed, at which point it becomes abusive and destructive.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's every couple's going to have conflicts. The best couples have conflicts, but the best couples resolve them in a rational, sane way. And the ones that gaslight each other end up really miserable and angry at each other. I think one of the temptations in long-term relationships is to win an argument, and that mm-hmm. is never the case. I always say, like, if you win an argument, you've lost part of the battle. Or if you win an argument, you've won a battle, but you've lost part of the war, right? Long-term relationship success is about equity and people feeling like things are fair. And we have this amazing accounting system in our brains that keeps track. You know, even if you're like, oh, no, I love my partner, it's unconditional love. It's built in, you know. And what it's doing is it's keeping track of this ratio, which is, does my partner do 5 good things for every 1 negative thing? That's the simple accounting. So you can think about that 2 ways. One, you could decrease the negative, or, you know, alternatively, you could increase the positive. So, and it's not that hard. You know, little compliments, little favors, those count. Your accounting system will count that as positive. And that gives you equity of sorts to bring up conflicts and to bring up things that are negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think some of the research on successful relationships is having that ratio of at least 5-1 and then hopefully 10-1. Like really, really happy relationships will have 10 positive interactions for 1 negative interaction. And positive interaction could be anything, you know, compliment, smiles, hugs, sex, you know, little gifts, you're doing something for somebody, a lot of different things. But yeah, so kind of, but at least 5-1, you want to be at that ratio.
Okay, so you talked about this concept of being mood dependent. How can I help myself not be mood dependent?
Yeah, that can be a hard one, and I think some of us are more susceptible to that than other people. And some things are going to work for other better for some than for others. Some of the things that can be, some of the strategies you can use is keep yourself busy. Like, have other things that you're interested in and doing, and, you know, hobbies and friends and hopefully work that is inspiring and exciting, so that you are kind of, you know, you have other sources of satisfaction, that your social needs are being met in other ways. Because it can be, I mean, it can be pretty distressing and disruptive to your day, right, to go and weeks and whatever to kind of go up and down. But yeah, kind of having things to do in your life. And I don't know.
You want to do really mindfulness take on
yeah,
this?
Yeah.
Well, I'm fairly sensitive, so that's a problem with me, is interacting with someone based on my mood. And I've come across this really simple thing. I think it's originally from AA, called HALT. Anytime you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, ask yourself, why am I texting this person I'm interested in? Or why am I reaching out? It may be to fulfill a need that you have. And I don't think anybody else can solve any problems you have going on yourself. So I do HALT, ask why. Meditation helps. It helps with, it's not a panacea, but it helps with a lot of things. And it helps me in seeing things more clearly. Not to say I'm not a chronic text other people and want things and flirt and all that, but I think it's really important to understand that you can't use other people. A healthy relationship is when two people see it clearly, have effective communication, and interact with one another in a way that they don't need something from the other person. It's about elevating the other person. It's about that ratio, 10 to 1 or more.
Also, any other coping strategy that you have for emotional regulation of negative emotions, right, when you're angry or sad or whatever, different people approach that differently. Maybe, you go and exercise, and that will regulate your emotions. You go and watch a movie with friends, and that will regulate. Some people have less healthy ways of doing that, drinking to oblivion and partying all night and doing drugs, and, hopefully you're not going to do that, but... there are a lot of other ways. One thing, depending on what the relationship is, of not being too focused on one person can be kind of having a rotation of partners, because that keeps your mind off, any one given partner. If we're talking about a more casual scenario, right, where you're not sure where you're going, not a long-term single relationship, but... Very often these things happen, that mood dependency is happening early on in the relationship, so you might be dating a few different people, or they might be dating a few different people, and having that outlet can also be useful.
I'm going to combine two questions here then. Do you think because people seem to communicate through text and social media, they really don't know how to read people's body language to confront or communicate their feelings, and as parents, how do we help our teenagers navigate this when we don't necessarily understand the issues of media and help them get to deep conversations that have to happen?
Oh, wow. Okay. I think it's hard online. I think it's hard in person. So, I said this yesterday in a panel. It takes me about six to eight weeks to write a chapter, usually. I wrote the awkward sex and dating chapter in 2 days. It was the easiest thing I've ever written, just because dating relationships are so confusing, right? And it's the expectations are so clear and so easily misaligned, and so you're in this guessing game about what does this cricketing mean? Is the person just busy, or are they playing hard to get, or are they trying to mess with me? We're open to all these different kinds of interpretations. So I don't know that I have any help for you in that regard. I'll tell you, my friend Jess is the chief science officer at Bumble. And she's great. And this is her profession, right? Online dating. But her thing is always this. She's like, this is just a mechanism to get face-to-face. Don't languish in the messaging. I mean, that's not good living, right? I think as far as the meaningful stuff goes, this isn't maybe a great answer for parents, but I would say this to start. It depends on what your kid wants, And I think what kids want now is a lot more diversified than even when I was a teenager, and certainly more diversified than when my parents, I think, were teenagers. At least the options to enact different kinds of relationship lives. Going with the truth thing, I guess, then my inclination would be have that conversation and then talk about the pros and cons of each and talk about how they might wisely navigate whatever decision that they're going to make, rather than trying to force them into some standard role that they're going to then do something else anyways, which teenagers do, right? And now they go in totally ill-prepared and uninformed, and to, with the topic we have today, maybe at risk then of getting into a bad situation.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, technology is not going away. You know, it's here to stay. We're going to be using text and Snapchat and whatnot for a while. But I think that's the distinction. It should be the distinction, because often on these social media, you don't have a lot of the cues that you have in real life. You don't have body language. You don't have eye contact. You don't have, it's so easy for arguments to escalate, and you don't have the opportunity to have that positive thing that you can inject into an argument, like a smile or a touch or a hug or, you know, those kinds of things that can de-escalate. And so I would say it's great. Use it as a vehicle to meet people and to, you know, logistically connect and share some stuff. But if there are serious conversations that need to be had, those should probably be happening in person.
Yeah. Just to add to that, I think Ty mentioned self-authorship online earlier. And, like, the gig is up. I mean, the classic example is if you are on Bumble or Tinder, you may meet the person face-to-face, and oh, I didn't know they had that filter. Like, you did a really just, so it's important that both parties know that you are putting your best foot forward. It's like your social CV, and after you get together face-to-face, you just put that aside and hopefully engage in a more human interaction.
New word, right, catfishing, what he was just talking about, right? So when somebody has all their photos and they're not exactly, they don't exactly look like what that person looks like right now. It could be they're using photos from like 20 years ago or 10 years ago when they look very different, or they could be using photos of a completely different person. Yeah, one of my friends just two nights ago on her way to Boulder, she was Tindering with someone, and it was getting hot and heavy. I mean, they had just met, but they went deep. And maybe 4 or 5 hours later, she realized that he's using photos of some German model, and that is completely not him at all. So, yeah. She was very disappointed. Yeah. He looked gorgeous. Oh, my God. Yeah. I know, we were all like, holy fuck.
For you. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Too good to be true.
A quick catfishing story to add. I played briefly with a guy named Manti Te'o. I don't know if you all know who he is. A great linebacker at Notre Dame. And after a game against Michigan State, they interviewed him, and he's in tears and dedicated the game to his girlfriend, whose mother just passed away. He was catfished. This was an entirely digital relationship. The girl didn't exist.
Oh.
So it can be frightening. Yeah. I think particularly.
Was it a man?
I think it was. Yeah. It was. I think it was like someone from his background that knew him and was, you know, wanted to mess with him.
Oh, man.
It can be frightening to be on these platforms as someone who's in the public eye. Catfishing is almost dangerous.
Yeah. And the question is, can a relationship, or maybe we should ask it, is how can a relationship that has guys gaslighting turn into a good and healthy one? How do we turn things around?
That's a hard one, and it really is going to depend on, it's so idiosyncratic. There are so many factors that will play into that depending on the people and the relationship, on how intentional this was, on how long it went on for, and how much damage was done to the person. You know, I know people who've been in gaslighting relationships for years, and yeah, for 3-4 years, and came out of them absolutely broken and then destroyed. And I think that is too far gone, right? There's no salvaging that. And I think it may be possible if it kind of comes to light a little earlier on, and it's not as intentional. Maybe the person doing it wasn't as aware that they were doing it, and maybe you can kind of come out of that and build a healthier one. But yeah,
I think the rarest instances I've seen it work out. Usually it won't, but the rare instances I have, I think what happened is somebody really put their foot down, and they just said X, Y, and Z are BS, and I think you're full of it. And if you don't have anything good to say right now, and if you don't have good behavior that follows, And if this ever happens again, I'm out. Sometimes I've seen the person just shape up. They're a good person who got lost for a little bit. But I think, once again, you know, just know yourself, know what's right, and you can trust your intuition in these cases, and just go ahead and vocalize it and stand up for what you believe in.
Yeah, if something feels like it's not good for you, it's probably not good for you.
Yeah.
Any final words?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.